Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Presence, The Monkey, and Grand Theft Hamlet.
I don't like having to report this, but I'm not really crazy about any of the movies I'm going to talk about today. None of them is really terrific, in my opinion. But the first one is the best of the bunch, and that is the movie Presence, just that one word, Presence. Directed by Steven Soderbergh from a screenplay by David Kopp. And Soderbergh, of course, has been around for a very, very long time, and he's always been quite the independent filmmaker. And he's made big movies, and he's made small movies. He's known largely for, well, it's hard to say what he's known most for. He burst on the scene, so to speak, way back in the late 1980s with Sex, Lies, and Videotape, which I think is a movie that still has quite a lot of admirers. And he made, oh, the Ocean's 11 movies, the remake of Ocean's 11, and so forth and so on. And Traffic is another one of his big movies. We gave that a big award back when I was chair of the New York Film Critics Circle. And he made Erin Brockovich, and he's made, you know, famous movies like that, and then a whole lot of movies that most people would never remember because they just kind of come on the scene and people watch them for a little while and then they vanish. Presence is probably one of that latter kind. I don't think that people are going to be talking about Presence in years to come, but it's just not a badly made movie. And people who like horror movies, and especially old-fashioned horror movies, are probably going to like it, have a good time with it, at least, you know, for a while, until Soderbergh makes another one. I should also mention that he retired from filmmaking many years ago, but he's kept right on making films. So go figure. Anyway, about Presence, the movie. We have a movie which takes place in a house. It's a very, very nice house. Looks like it's sort of in a really nice suburb somewhere. The whole movie takes place within this house. Interestingly, there's another current film, not nearly as well received as Presence has been, the movie Home, which is out right now, streaming, by Robert Zemeckis, also takes place almost entirely within a home, a house. That movie jumps around in time, literally over centuries at some points. Presence does not do that at all. Presence more or less takes place in regular storytelling time, and we have the story of a family. At the beginning, we have people looking at the house, deciding whether to buy it. Then this family buys the house from the realtor, and they move in, and then things start to happen which start to signal to us, if we don't already know it, that yes, this is going to be a ghost story. There is something in this house which is not just the people in the family, which is not just the mother and the father, who apparently are in some sort of business together. It is not the teenage children, Chloe and Tyler. Something else appears to be there. Also, this family has kind of a melancholy backstory in some ways. Some very close friends, apparently, or at least schoolmates of the teenagers, have recently died under mysterious circumstances. And the daughter especially is mourning this. So that's another thing that's going on in this film. Now, what I haven't mentioned yet, and which is the most important thing about the movie Presence, is the camera. Steven Soderbergh's camera. Steven Soderbergh has always photographed his own movies under a pseudonym, Peter Andrews. So whenever you see that name on a Steven Soderbergh film under the cinematographer, the director of photography, it's really Steven photographing his own film. And he does that here. And oh, does he ever do it? Because that is what you notice about this movie more than anything else. And I think even people who never particularly pay attention to the camera work or the technical attributes of a movie are going to really notice the camera work here, because the camera, it's on a Steadicam setup, which means that the camera can be moved around, glided around. It can swoop and soar and go up and down stairs and do all these things without any jiggle whatever. It's the opposite of the sort of old shaky cam style before Steadicams were invented. This camera is going all over the place. It's going up the stairs, down the stairs, around the rooms, in the kitchen, out of the kitchen, and it doesn't do it so fast that you get seasick watching it. Well, some people do have that problem, I think. I don't. But it just is constantly doing that. So, oh gosh, the camera is really the star of this movie, I would say. In the meanwhile, yes, of course, there's a story going on. And of course, the camera is in a way part of the story because the camera is basically embodying or representing or demonstrating the presence of whatever this presence is, this unseen presence. And after a while, other things start to happen. And this is where the movie really, really starts to remind me of another film, Poltergeist, the old movie produced by Steven Spielberg, directed by Tobe Hooper, Poltergeist, a real classic of many years ago. Oh, this film is so similar. Ghostly things start happening in the house. Things fall off shelves. Things like books and little objects like that start to move all by themselves mysteriously across a room. Sometimes these things are almost witnessed or are actually witnessed by a member of the family, usually the teenage girl, Chloe. So that's what's going on in this film. The camera is moving all over the place all the time. Things are happening that are mysterious in the house. Every once in a while, a shelf will collapse noisily and things will tumble down onto the floor. And it does appear that Chloe is the one who is usually the closest to these happenings. Then one more thing I'll reveal not late in the film, but maybe around halfway through the film. Yes, somebody brings by a psychic. That always happens in movies like this. And the psychic says, oh yes, there's a ghostly presence here. And the psychic, the ghost is troubled and there's something it has to do, but it doesn't know what it is. So, okay, that also enters into the picture. So now we're also wondering what the presence is there to do, and the presence itself apparently doesn't know what it's there to do. Then there's one other character I'll mention who is a teenage friend of the girl. He's sort of a boyfriend of the girl. He's a friend of the boys too, the two children, but he comes by the house and he turns out to be really, really right at the center of the climax of the movie. Now, as ghost stories go and as horror movies go, presence is certainly not very bloody. It really is not at all. In fact, most of it is very quiet and very restrained. What makes most of the action in the movie is the camera moving all over the place all the time. But the climax of the movie, way, way at the end of the film, is very dark, and I found it kind of preposterous, actually. So yes, there's a big surprise twist at the end, and it's dark and it's gloomy. There's also a subplot which goes on. Apparently, the husband and wife, the people who own the house, the parents, are involved in some sort of shady business, and it's never really made clear exactly what that is. So that's another little, I found, mysterious element of the film. Maybe if I saw the film a couple of more times, I would figure it out. I don't think it's ever specified. I think it's just another element of the movie. So what I'm describing probably sounds pretty complicated. Actually, the movie is really simple. It only has a very few characters, and it really takes place entirely within this house. But yeah, a fair amount of stuff happens within that framework, but it happens sort of gradually and sort of quietly. And I found most of presence sort of nice to sort of sink into and just watch and let it unfold. It really reminded me of Poltergeist. I don't think it's a very original film, but it's sort of an interesting movie in its own way. And again, the idea of making a sort of a minimalist film that takes place entirely within one setting and only has a handful of characters, that always appeals to me because the filmmakers are setting themselves up as sort of a challenge when they do that. And Steven Soderbergh very often likes to set himself up a challenge in the new film that he's making. So Presence, very conventional ghost story, nicely done, nothing exciting or really special. I had a good time watching it, but I don't think it's going to stay very strongly in my memory. So that's the movie I like the most out of the three films I want to talk about today. Now let us move to our second horror movie, which is called The Monkey. And this is a movie which is directed and written by Osgood Perkins, based on a Stephen King short story. And this is basically what they call a splatter movie, which is to say it is very violent. It's not violent every single moment. The violent pops up at certain moments along the way during the story, usually in an attempt to be a kind of a jump scare. It's bloody. It has a lot of really sort of over-the-top, in-your-face blood and guts spewing all over the screen and spewing all over the characters. And that is supposed to be part of the pleasure of a movie like this. There are people who really enjoy that. I myself am not especially fond of the splatter subgenre of the horror genre, but if you like that sort of thing, okay, The Monkey is going to give you a whole lot of that. So what we have here is a movie about It's sort of a toy, although at the very beginning, one of the characters insists it's not a toy. And what that character means is that the thing is really dangerous and is really violent and can really kill you, but it looks like a toy. It's a rather large, you have to sort of carry it in both your arms, toy monkey with a drum in its lap and a very, very mean smile. I'm not even sure if you can describe it as a smile. All of its teeth are showing. And if you turn the key in the back, the monkey starts beating on the drum with its two hands, with the drumsticks in the hands. And if one of the hands comes down or is up, or I forget exactly what the rule is, somebody is going to die. So who is going to die? Is it the person who turns the key? Is it the person who's there when the key is being turned? Well, this is something the characters debate among themselves, but they pretty quickly realize that the monkey is somehow a supernatural thing which kills people when you turn the key. Now, the two main characters of the movie are twins. At the beginning of the movie, they are kids. Then later in the movie, they are grown men. And they are very estranged from each other. Right from the beginning of the movie, they don't get along. One of the twins is always bullying the other one. And by the end of the movie, or by the middle of the movie, they're grown men and they haven't even seen each other in a very long time. But they're still feuding over this monkey and what the monkey means and how the monkey should be used or not be used, and all of that is going on. And along the way, yes, a whole lot of people get killed. A whole lot of people die. Very, very mysterious, very, very strange. But the movie just really enjoys pushing all of us in our faces, pouring it all over us, and it's sort of fun. Now, Osgood Perkins, who wrote and directed the movie, is sort of a horror specialist. He also acts in the movie. And, you know, he knows what he's doing. He knows how to put together an entertainment machine that will give you a whole lot of what you want if you come to see a movie like this. I found the movie really dumb. It's just silly. It's just stupid. Okay, it's reasonably well done. The special effects are reasonably well done. They're, you know, you're not going to see wires pulling things around or anything like that. And yes, there are a few surprises along the way in the story. But oh my gosh, the whole thing is just so silly and so stupid. So if you like silly, stupid movies with a whole lot of gore and splatter, then race off to the monkey. You'll have a good time. A lot of people apparently are. But it is not my kind of movie, and I didn't find it nearly clever enough to hold my interest all the way through. Of course, I watched it. Of course, I followed it. But, oh, gee, I was really bored during a lot of it, and I was waiting for it to be over. Don't turn that key again. Okay. So, and by the way, I'll just mention one more thing. Don't leave before the very last shot, because it ends with one of the most gruesome and horrible jokes I've seen in a movie in a very long time, and it's over in a split second. But I have to admit, it's sort of an original idea. So The Monkey, not a good movie, but it has its little moments along the way. Now I would like to talk about the most experimental movie of today's show, which is Grand Theft Hamlet. And yes, it is sort of what that sounds like. It's streaming. You can find it if you look around. And this is a movie about some people. It's being billed as a documentary, but it's nothing like a conventional documentary at all. For one thing, the whole thing is voiceover. We don't see any real human beings in the movie until the very, very, very end, when we get a quick little photographic glimpse of the people who actually made the movie and are in the movie. But this is what it's about. During the COVID pandemic, which we all remember, a couple of people who were just bored and didn't know what to do got this wacky idea. And this is at the beginning of the movie. And the idea is they're playing the video game Grand Theft Auto, where you jump into cars and drive real fast and people get killed and beaten up and all of that. And you do all this virtually in a video game. And the thing is that this video game is really elaborate. People out there, I'm sure, know all about Grand Theft Auto. Really, really elaborate. And there's all kinds of settings, and any number of different people can enter the game. It's a game that you play with other players who are just out there somewhere in cyberspace. So you play it with your friends. You play it with total strangers. You're all in there together. But it's a very elaborate video game world. So what these two decided to do is, what if we put on a production of Hamlet using the setup that's in Grand Theft Auto. So that's what they did. They reached out to other people, strangers mostly, to play different parts in Hamlet. And ultimately, apparently, they did it. Now, we don't see the Hamlet that they created from beginning to end, assuming that they did create a Hamlet. What we have here are bits and pieces. We have the casting of it. We have the idea of it. We see them refining the idea along the way. And all of this totally within the video game Grand Theft Auto. So, I am not a video game person. Years and years ago, I was pretty good at Frogger, but that's about it. This is not my scene. On the other hand, I've seen any number of productions of Hamlet over the years, so I'm into that a lot. If you would like this combination of extremely high culture, Shakespeare's Hamlet, and extremely low culture, the video game Grand Theft Auto, combined in a wacky sort of semi-documentary way, well, then you'll have a good time at Grand Theft Hamlet. It's an unusual movie. It's an experimental movie. I salute it for taking chances and doing something utterly unique and really, really different. I only wish I liked it better, but some people are having a really good time with it, and I have to say, give it a shot. Maybe it'll turn out to be your cup of tea. I really found it a little bit wearing after a while, but there's nothing else like it. It's the kind of movie that I call a what's it. So that is my somewhat what's it story this week.
For which we thank you, as ever and always, David Starrett. Films in Focus, the films Presence, The Monkey, and Grand Theft Hamlet.
Films in Focus with David Starrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.